No problemo.
No problemo.
No problemo. Sandwiches are my favorite kind.
Yeah. I don't like problem sandwiches.
Me neither.
Yeah, those are the worst.
Like, they're full of ants.
Yeah.
Ants got in the mayonnaise.
You know, we just rewatched Lightyear over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And there's the part where they've got the meat bread meat sandwiches.
Right.
And they're all making fun of them like bread meat bread. And I'm like, this joke, you know what? I see what they're going for here. They like changed a really classic food, but like, that's just stupid.
There's no way for it to make more sense.
There's no way it makes more sense. Nah, it's the best part. Juicy fingers. And you're like, nope. Sorry, Taika. It's stupid.
Juicy fingers.
No one wants juicy fingers at all.
It's true. It's true.
Then Buzz takes like one bite and he's like, it was pretty good this way. Yeah, that's why you only took one bite though, isn't it?
Just one.
Just one. Just one.
Even this digitally animated actor inside of a film can't pretend to enjoy meat bread meat.
Let me tell you, the other problem is they animate the ham a little, like the marbling on the ham a little too well.
Oh, it's like
you could have just gone like solid pink, you know, like it would have been fine.
Unpleasant.
You gave it. Yeah, I don't like it. No. I will say though, having rewatched Lightyear, I was like, this movie was way better than I remembered.
I agree. I think that when we watch a lot of Pixar movies, we go into them with like very specific expectations about how we want it to work. And a lot of times it doesn't match what we feel like is the right way.
Right.
And so you're like in the theater kind of like, so many missed opportunities, you know? And then it's sort of like, but then you get further from it. You go back and you're like, okay, now that I haven't thought about it extensively as to what I need it to be, I actually kind of enjoy it.
It was actually really good. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot. Socks is, you know, just great.
Just great.
Fun character.
I always had this experience with the Harry Potter movies growing up, which was that like I would, you know, the further I had been from reading the books, the more I enjoyed the movies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And yeah. Then it's like, wow, these are really good. They're super enjoyable. Then you're like, oh, they left out all the interesting bits. Where's Ludo Bagman?
Come on. Yeah. No Ludo Bagman at all.
Yeah.
No Winky.
At all.
At all. No Quidditch World Cup.
Golly.
Man. Anyway.
All right. Yeah. You ready?
Yes. Okay.
Everybody, hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I'm here. I made it back. Thanks for having me on the show.
I really couldn't do it by myself. It would really just become this like giant spiral of existential dread, and everybody listening at home or in their cars or on like a walk with their dogs or whatever would be like, wow.
Yeah.
This was heavy.
Yeah, yeah. Good thing you've got me here to lighten the mood, as it were.
That's exactly it.
Do what I can.
They call him Jay the Mood Lightener Carlin.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I was going to tell a time travel joke.
Oh, well, Jay, do you have any jokes about time travel?
Well, I was going to tell you one, but you didn't like it, so.
Because it's like you already told it to you already. Oh no, that's good.
All right, yeah, that's pretty good.
That's quite. and you know what? You're right. It wasn't that funny. This joke was funny. But the one in the past, you know what? I'll pass on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Passed on that one. Nailed it.
Woo.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I feel like you caught me so off guard and I was all like, you know, rearing and ready to go into conversation. But Jay, here's something I get to brag about, you know, like
brag on, dude.
Listen, we've been doing the renovations, right?
Yeah.
Like there's all sorts of stuff going on. I'm getting a new bathroom, a new tile shower, got like a new bedroom with skylights that have like solar closing window shades and all the sort, but the real boon of it all, Jay, is I now have exterior outlets.
Ooh, exterior! You can plug stuff in while you're outside.
When I'm outside, I can plug stuff in.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
What power?
If I so desire to take my urns that like through the spring and summer and fall occupy like mums and pansies and petunias and stuff like that. It's like now going into the winter, if I so desire to get a couple of like evergreen looking shrubberies to go in there, I could put little light shows on them if I felt like it. Oh my gosh,
you could do it.
I know. I mean,
crazy.
Like, even like the Christmas lights, normally there's like a gigantic like extension cord coming from like the back of my house, where technically I do have an outlet already, you know, not to brag again. I know that now I'm describing three different outlets, but these are the upgrades to an old house that are quality of life moments that you're just sort of like,
whew.
Dude, so now I have spigots on three corners of my house,
yeah.
You know, so I got water anywhere I need it. I've got electrical anywhere I need it.
Anywhere you want it.
If Addison wants to set up the inflatable little bounce house, I don't have to run an extension cord or bring my generator outside. Like,
right.
I mean, I've unlocked a whole new frontier of exciting possibilities and prospects.
That's so fun.
And I can't wait. It is.
Dude, okay, here's my... I have exterior outlets.
Okay, well, right? I mean, you know, join the club.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But in my garage, the previous owners left a retractable extension cord.
When I first came over to your house and saw the retractable extension cord on the wall, I was like, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Right. And it would be nice, except...
Don't say except.
No, but it's... Except that you pull it out and it can get about like the length of the garage, maybe like to the front door of the car, you know?
Okay.
And that's about the length of the retractable extension cord.
Okay, gotcha.
So it's like, it feels like you have this super long cord right here, this nice feature.
Right.
Except it doesn't really go as far as you want it to.
Ugh.
And like right there, then on the outside of the house is where the outlets are. And it's like, I have a really long extension cord. But I almost need to like take it off the wall it's on and put it right there. But then it would be like right on the front door and be kind of like ugly, you know?
Yeah. Yep,
so yep. I don't know. Yeah. It's frustrating that I have a long one and it feels like it should be the answer to all my problems, but then it's not.
Why do you need an extension cord like in or around your cars for like vacuum cleaner?
I guess maybe for vacuum cleaners or whatever they were doing in the garage, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. I mean, like if you had like a whole like workshop, maybe it would be just nice because you just bring the power wherever you needed it.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I don't.
But you don't.
Yeah.
Dang.
Okay. I know.
Well,
bummer.
That's too bad. I do like your retractable extension cord, though.
Exactly.
I covet such a thing.
And then I've got an electric hedge trimmer.
Oh, sure.
You know,
yeah,
which you plug in.
Right.
So it's like, it feels like I'm set, but then I'm not.
Dude,
I can like almost reach the hedges, you know?
That was exactly it. Yeah. I have this like corner of my yard that I had like an electric rototiller for a while that eventually I just like burned the motor out on because it was like a Black and Decker, you know, special or something. But it was the same thing. You had to plug it into an outlet and then the outlet that like I had like three daisy chained extension cords coming from like the backyard. So
safest
I'm like,
thing ever.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that's like what any fire marshal would instruct you to do is to take as many extension cords as humanly possible to make like a 300-foot extension cord.
Right.
And
to
then
go run something that chops up the ground in front of it.
Precisely, yes, with spinning blades.
Right, exactly what all cords love.
Right, and even with all of the powers of my extension cords combined, I could still only get like within like maybe 18 inches of as far as I needed to reach. And so it's almost like one of those where you're trying to like use like forward momentum to use like the elasticity. Now we're really talking safety, you know, but it's sort of like, just give it a yoink.
But enough to get the elasticity, but not to pull out the plug from one link in the chain.
That's right. Yep.
We've been there.
You got to do your knot method. That's what I tend to do. It's like, I'll take the extended cord, you know, do a little once over, plug it into itself.
Redistribute the tension.
No, precisely.
Exactly. Yes, that's what you're supposed to do on light stands and, you know, film sets.
Oh, so
you
what
put I'm, like, you wrap it around like one of the legs. So if someone trips over it, it doesn't pull down the light stand from the top, it pulls it from the bottom.
It's very clever.
I know.
You know, people who deal with cords often, there is a joke in the TV show Community where there's like a class called Ladders.
Yeah.
You know, and it's they keep going, like, you know, ladders, you know, who doesn't want to take ladders?
Right. Yeah.
And
like you could not possibly need one entire semester's worth of education about a ladder.
About a ladder. But then if you ever try to use a ladder in anything other than just like the most basic application, it's like, how do you do this?
Right.
And then like you see like construction people who are like good at this kind of thing. And you're right. Like, whoa.
They just like pull that little string and like, yeah, it works.
You made it look so easy.
You made it look so easy. And then you just climb up and it won't come down. It's like, well, maybe. You know.
Well, you know what the other thing about big ladders is that they have like a weird center of gravity because they're like forever feet long.
Yeah.
And it reminds me a lot of when you go to do the Spartan race. It's like there are all of these like super body weight related like obstacles
yes.
that you have to get through. A couple of them are just simple, like carry a 5 gallon bucket full of gravel or carry like an Atlas stone, which is like a 90 pound ball of concrete,
right?
You know, or whatever. But
well, those wouldn't be body weight things.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah
those are the exceptions. And then there, yeah, so there's a few that are not body weight things, but I would say that like body weight is like an area that like I specialize in. Like that's a good
right
wheelhouse.
Got that.
for old BC.
Mm-hmm.
And you too, for that matter. I mean,
oh well, thank you.
Of course. And you can yeah. do the strength stuff, so real dual threat,
I guess
there.
So yeah.
The one that I find to be suspiciously difficult though is they do this spear toss, and the spear toss has a simple trick to solve it.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like once you know it, you can do it pretty well. But this was kind of like one of those things where if you're doing a Spartan race and you fail any of the obstacles, the like nobody's actually there to enforce this, but the technical rule is that you're supposed to do 30 burpees.
I think if you're like doing like the if you're like competing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then it's a different story. Then they'll yeah. have like a judge there who
right.
is specifically making sure you're getting all of your things in. But you know, if like any pedestrian person who is just going to like participate in an event, it's like it's more about completing it and the camaraderie and getting the cool medal and
yeah.
the fun photos and
yeah, you know. Spending the day on the obstacle course.
And, exactly. Yeah. yeah, getting muddy, doing all the fun stuff or whatever. But yeah, so basically when you're trying to do the Spartan spear toss, you basically have a broomstick with a nail sticking out of the end of it and you're trying to throw it into a hay bale. And this one is oddly difficult because it's like not strength, it's technical.
Right.
It's like a technical skill. And it's not necessarily like the kind of technical skill that you're probably just practicing at home.
Right.
And then to make matters worse is that in order to make it easy to retrieve the spear over and over and over again, because so many people come through and throw it, is they tie a rope onto the end of it.
Right.
And the rope is then like this other weird factor
right.
where it's like, even if you practice at home, you probably weren't practicing with like a rope.
Yeah. So now you have to account for that weird amount of drag off the back of the stick.
Exactly. But yeah, so if you need the trick, it's basically like hold the broomstick, you know, kind of like in your hand until you find like the fulcrum point, you
right.
know, where it'll just like rest exact, nice and easy.
Yeah. The center point, the center of balance on it. Yeah.
The center of balance. Yep. And then if you throw it, then it'll throw straight.
But make sure you get slack first.
You got to get slack.
Make sure you
gotta make sure
slack.
It's not like looped. Yeah. I had this happen in one of the Spartan races I did where like I threw it and I mean it was like headed for bullseye and it was like looped around the gate or whatever on the bottom and it like yoinked back like 1 inch away from like the hay bale. And I looked at the judge and I was like, I'm counting that.
Yeah. Like, that was
like,
good.
It's like there's no, it was 100% the rope.
Right.
Not my ability to throw it. And honestly, that was where I realized that they don't really care because they were just sort of like, Go ahead,
whatever.
Yeah. So it's probably one of those things where if you're ever doing a Spartan race and you're like, I just don't know how to do this obstacle, it's like, just walk around.
You just walk around it, you know.
It'll be fine.
Yep.
No big deal on that front. So how did I get here though? Testing something, trying to do cords, daisy chain. Oh yeah, basically. Yeah. So I have outdoor outlets now and I just wanted to brag about it.
Okay.
I'm really excited.
Nice.
Yeah. It's the little things.
It is. That's like the, you know, you have your brand new bedroom, but now also you can plug in, you know, anything outside.
Yeah, like inflatable little like wacky waving inflatable balloon armband or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
You know? This year Halloween, I could just go as hard as I feel like going.
You could have all the inflatable things in your yard ever.
I could.
Yeah.
And you know what? Might.
You might.
Might just do it.
Wow.
You know, like I feel like there was an era of my life where I was like, inflatable like yard decor. Mm-hmm. Like who does that?
Right.
You know, and now I'm sort of getting to the point where it's just like lean in.
Maybe it's you. Maybe you're the kind of person who does that.
Maybe I'm that kind of person. I think on Amazon they sell like a 30-foot tall Santa Claus.
Wow.
That you can like stake down to the ground.
Man.
And it's just positively massive. I'm like
30 foot.
You're coming home with me.
You're coming up. That's like as tall as your house. Taller.
Hold on. Let me see if it's 30 feet. I wonder if now, if I'm speaking in hyperbole, let me double.
It sounds like the pump to keep that inflated would be very loud.
It might be. It mm-hmm. might be. But, you know, I'll put it on a timer, only have it come on.
From, right. Like, as soon you know, as you leave the house.
Well, no, I'll have it be off throughout the day.
Okay.
And then only on at night.
Only on at night.
Because certainly it's illuminated. Large Santa in.
I'm so excited.
Large outdoor
inflatable. I'm on the edge of my sleigh over here.
Are you? Okay. Yeah. Let's see. 4 foot. No, that's embarrassing.
No, what? Don't even bother.
14 foot. I mean, still really not even as big as we were mm-hmm. hoping for. 12 yeah. foot. 12.
Lower. Worse.
This is not what I was expecting, and I'm deeply upset. 12 foot by 7 foot giant Santa Claus. What is happening? What happened to my 30 foot
what
Santa
happened
Claus?
To 30 foot?
20.6 giant.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
20?
Yeah.
Well, that's huge.
20 is huge. 20 okay. is huge.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I feel pretty good about where we're at vis-a-vis absolutely gigantic
Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. And all you right. know what? I think I'm probably just going to, I think I'm just going to commit.
Okay.
I'm getting a Bowflex.
Getting a Bowflex.
18 foot, you know. Whew. Man,
okay. Say you're getting a Bowflex. I think you're actually giving me your weight bench.
And that is actually true.
Yeah.
So the other thing that is going on with home project front at the moment, other than the quest for a 30 foot inflatable Santa Claus from right. my yard, is inevitably whenever you're like changing stuff about your house, or normally like when you're moving, you go through and you do like the sell, donate, throwaway
right.
conversation.
The purge.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I have been on like one of my like frequent selling purges where like I'm on like the marketplace or whatever, yeah. which
getting
involves. Yeah. Which I think I told you about last week because I found out one of our friends is now bald.
Oh,
because I had to log into Facebook.
Facebook for like yeah, your annual login.
My annual login.
To go sell things.
Yeah. So I was like, if anybody who knows me is technically friends with me, like I was selling one of my bikes. And so in order to like list them in like the local yard sale pages or whatever on Facebook, you have to make it so that you post the listing visible to friends, which normally I do not do.
Oh, okay.
So normally it's like, I don't need my friends to know that I'm like selling a thing.
Right. I don't even, yeah.
It's like, if you're one of my friends, then you don't get to buy my stuff.
Right.
That's just like the general rule. But with the bike, it was sort of like, this one's probably better to have listed in as many places as possible. So ended up having to do that. So I was like, if people know that I've been on social media, they're probably like, whoa, Ben's back.
Whoa. Oh my gosh.
Selling a bike, which I sold.
Your triumphant return.
My triumphant return. But no, this is the funny thing is that like whenever I go through a sell or like a selling spree on Marketplace or back Craigslist back in the day or whatever, I feel like it was something that people were like, oh my gosh, you're so good at doing this. And I think like when I take a step back and look at it, I'm like, am I good at it? Or do I just not have high standards for what I can resell something for? Because like, I feel like there could be people, I have like a very real bird in the hand is worth two in the bush when it comes to resale, market, Facebook marketplace, Craigslist, whatever. Like to me, the active buyer and a lowball offer is almost always worth just getting it over with.
Right. Just get it out. Right.
Right. Because it's like on some level, usually what's happening is that it's like, this is an item I don't want in my house anymore, more than anything else.
And that's your real, that's the real value of getting rid of it. Not even the money you're getting.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, you know, like I had like a big rack full of like dumbbells that I bought like back during the pandemic. And it was sort of like one of these things where like, I don't know whether I just got like wrapped up in the idea of like home gyms or whatever, but it's such a tantalizing idea in my head.
Yeah.
I like envision it. Like and chances are what's going to happen is I'm going to clear out all my weightlifting stuff and then be like, I should be able to work out at home. I need to be able to work out at home. And then I'm going to end up going through the whole thing again. Cause that's what, that's what I do. But yeah, no. So like getting that stuff just like cleared out, it was like, oh my gosh, I have 16 square feet of space in my basement all of a sudden that I can spin around and do activities with.
Yeah. That you're turning into your man cave.
Yeah. My man cave.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The term I hate, but the destination I'm oriented towards.
It's where it's at. We have been, speaking of that. Yeah. I recently got a new, a Pluto pin over the weekend.
Oh, dude, congratulations.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, here I am talking about my exterior outlets.
I know. You don't even know. I feel like I'm getting to have quite the robust Pluto pin collection here at this stage.
I think most people listening are like, yes, yes.
Yeah, no duh.
You've crossed that threshold quite some time
ago. Well, I mean, it was robust in terms of volume for right. sure.
But now you're starting to get
we're starting to get some pieces, man.
You've got some like holographics.
Yeah.
You know, per collecting Pokemon.
We're talking limited edition like 100 range, you know.
This is pretty impressive.
Like there's one in my house and then only 99 more at all. You know.
And at least two of them are probably in somebody's junk drawer because they forgot.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? They don't even know. They're like whatever. I got this whatever. But it was, I bring it up because, one, I see that you've got some pin collecting ramping up on the notes, but also because on eBay, I got it, that's where I got it is. And like, it was listed for like a certain amount. I'm just embarrassed what I actually paid for it, but there's always the make an offer. And to me, I'm always like, what a bogus button. Whoever takes the offers, like... Like, why? Well, I guess put it on there because maybe you'll get lucky. But like, sir, I feel like in my entire life, I've been like, make an offer. There's no chance the person will accept. There's no chance.
Right, right.
Because they have it listed here and they know the value. You can just look up the value. And if it's not that, then why would they accept?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know exactly what you mean. But then this is exactly what I'm saying is that like, I'm the kind of person who 100% accepts the offer.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, unless it's like an absolute low ball, it's sort of like, I mean, like you're like, if you want it, like,
right.
You know, and I mean, maybe that's the kind of thing where it's like, if you make your living doing it, it's like,
right.
You know, like,
and I don't know who this person is. Maybe they've just got like such a massive collection of pins that if they unload a semi big one, it's like, I don't care.
You know?
All yeah. I do all day is sell pins, you know?
All I do is sell pins all day.
No matter what.
I don't think I got the cadence right.
I know. Well, whatever. I offered 25 below asking and it was accepted. And I felt like, oh my gosh. Because even then when I looked it up, I was like, he's already listing at like 25 below value. So I'm really getting like $50 off.
Which is now at least giving people like a general ballpark of what we're talking about.
I know. So because clearly at least.
You probably didn't pay $2 for it. Probably didn't pay $12. It probably wasn't for it.
Listed at 27, and I'm like, how about two? And he's like, yeah,
sold.
You were right. That would have been amazing. I'd have been like, wow, go me.
I know,
go me,
dude. The thing that I am finding most shocking about the Disney pin collecting, because I've also been like ramping it up for sure, because we were getting pretty into it, like, you know, on like the last Disney trip that we went on, we were starting to like play with it a bit more. We have like our own pin board set up at home, and then we had to take it off the wall for like months. And one of the things that we did again with the renovation was we went through and we actually ran an electrical box above the pin board so that we could have like one of those like installed like portrait lights, yeah, like in like an art studio or whatever, which we had before, but it was just battery operated, which meant that like, you know, once every couple weeks it would die, and then it was like, did you remember to charge it, you know? And so like we were having like a party or something, we'd obviously like take
you'd go charge it, yeah.
But a lot of times it also meant that we weren't really like actually getting to like use it to its fullest. But now the hilarious thing was that we had the new portrait light installed and we failed to realize that there is not a power switch on it, nor is it connected to a light switch. So,
oh no,
it cannot be turned off.
It's only on.
It's only on. It is on all the time, which I need to fix, which I will fix. But it was hilarious because we were so excited about it. Then we had Alice's younger sister over with her girlfriend over the weekend and we were like going to do a sleepover or whatever. And they were going to sleep on our couch downstairs.
Right.
And it was kind of like, oh no, we can't turn off that light. Sorry about that. And
yeah,
it's just sort of like
enjoy the pins.
Enjoy all night. Yeah,
all night.
But no, I've been ramping up my Sully buying stuff. We have used the app Whatnot historically. Alice has used it for nude. She sold like a bunch of clothes on there from the shop and everything. But then we recently had a sponsorship with them, and it sort of like bubbled it back to the surface for me. And like, so I'm like oddly proud of like my screen time report every week.
Right.
Like, you know, my goal is basically like 2 hours. Like the daily usage is 2 hours. Like that's what I'm gunning for. And obviously for full clarity, I work at a desk with a computer, so it's not like that's the only time I'm
right. But you're not on your phone for more than 2 hours.
That's the goal at least. Yeah. And so I got my screen report from last week and it was like up 40 minutes per day, and the 40 minutes was Whatnot.
Oh man, so you did a lot.
Well, it's not even that I'm buying a lot. I'm learning a lot, which has been really enjoyable.
That is the fun.
Yeah, because like you start to get a feel for like, you know, people will do, they'll promote like the different things in a variety of different ways. Like, you know, this stream is doing like $1 starts. So like talking about like the more classic pins that maybe you just go and can buy like off the rack directly, not like a mystery box, just sort of like, this is the current Woody pin, you know, like it's Woody.
It's Woody.
He's standing there, you know, like nothing particularly themed.
Yeah. No limited edition value to it, you know,
nothing like that. Yeah. And so those usually sell for like, you know, $11, $12 or whatever. But what's always amazing to me as well is how hard it is to actually get like everybody involved knows how much it's all worth.
Right.
You know, so everybody involved is like very in on it. And like one of the things that I keep thinking I could find is even going on like Facebook Marketplace or whatever is like somebody just being like, hey, my kid went to college. They collected pins all through their childhood. We're just trying to unload the collection. You know, does anybody want to buy their binder?
Right.
You know, it's like that does not happen at all.
Well, there are people who are selling their collections on Facebook.
Well, everything I've seen on Facebook is people who are like literally like, here's my pin board, pick three for 60 or whatever.
Okay. I'll get you to the right pages, I suppose.
Okay.
Cause like I found one last week and I was just like going through and I'm like, this is like, that feels reasonable. It's like, you know, you'd have like a really good like trade center to be working off of,
which is exactly it. Yeah. So like when I go back to like my Diablo 2 days and in the beginning, like what I was obsessed with was like finding the currency that worked well in trades, because like a lot of times, so I'm looking for Selly pins. So Selly from Monsters Inc.
Right.
And like when you really get past that potato chip layer, you know, like all the stuff that they sell off the racks.
All the hidden Mickey ones and stuff and the ones you're going to find on the boards. Yeah.
Right. Then you start to like enter this like upper echelon and it's like, I want to be a part of the communal aspect of trading pins, but it's also like, I don't want to just go and buy pin after pin after pin after pin after pin in the hopes that these might be like good traders at some point in time. So it's like, I'm trying to figure out like how to like bypass certain avenues so I can be more prepared.
Right.
Cause I remember when we were at Disneyland or something like that, this was like maybe before you were like fully like locked and loaded on pin trading. And we met like a group of pin traders and you pulled out like a Ziploc bag with like,
I know, it was just like, oh, here's what I got. Yeah.
Yes. I got these. There's some, let me pull the pocket lint off.
You know? Right.
Like,
yeah.
Or whatever, which I mean was fine. Like everybody starts somewhere and I'd be willing to bet that we will encounter people who are like that.
Yes.
Sometime in the future. You know, it's like, it's all part of the fun, is just kind of graduating through the various layers. But like the, what I want is to be able to go and open my binder with things that like are good and available to be sold.
Right. Like shwing.
Exactly. It's like, oh, yeah, look at this.
Check it out. Check out my display.
Please let me know.
What would you like?
Let me know what you love. I have so many good ones.
Yeah. Are you looking for a certain character? Or, you
know? I know. Yeah. So it's like, you're so good about just collecting like Pluto, which is amazing. Like, and I feel like there's so many of them.
Yeah. Pluto, he's vast.
He's vast.
As one of like the big six, you know?
Right. Right. I am fearful that I will like, that there's like a finish line for me.
No, Sully. I feel like there's still going to be a lot. Cause it's been, when did that come out? 2001. There's 25 years worth of pins out there.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
Like it's out there. I mean, he's like, I would say like, oh, and he's a main character, but like Lightning's a main character and those are harder to find for sure.
Right.
For whatever reason, Disney, print the Lightning McQueen pins, dude.
You know, I feel like we got in like a whole thing about like there not being enough Emperor's New Groove merch. And I feel like they listened.
They listened.
Know? I mean, that's, it's like, I have no idea if that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's the classic like Bader Meinhof thing where it's sort of like, hey, I'm going to like shout this into the void. But am I the influence or am I part of the wave?
I think it could be part of the, I think millennials, like, I think, do you remember when Rapunzel hit net or Tangled hit Netflix? It had like a second life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in theaters, I think it was well received, but then it got on Netflix and people could like watch it from home or whatever.
Do you mean Encanto?
No, I mean Tangled.
Tangled. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As well. Because this was like way back when Netflix was just starting.
Okay. Okay.
And this was like, you know, yes, when a Disney movie would have been on Netflix.
Okay. I see. Yeah. Before Disney Plus.
Before Disney Plus was a thing. Yeah. This was like one of those early movies. But, and this also did happen to Encanto as well.
Right. Yeah. Encanto kind of had a poor box office, but then got like wildly popular because of streaming.
Because of Disney Plus. Exactly. So I think that is what happened with Emperor's New Groove. Like, it came out in theaters, but instead of everyone being able to like share it, everyone got like the DVD and everyone watched it at home and everyone loved it privately, but no one shared it publicly until all the millennials grew up and got online and were like, Emperor's New Groove, greatest thing ever, right? And everyone was like, yes, oh my God, yes. Right. Correct. Right. Yes.
It's so self-aware.
Right, exactly. And then everyone was like, oh, and then Disney was like, oh, wait, what now? Everyone loves Emperor's New Groove? Is that everyone? Like, everyone. Okay. And they have the kids now. We got to make more Emperor's New Groove stuff.
We got to make more stuff because they're going to come to the parks. They're going to buy their kids' stuff. And then they're going to hope that they can share the tradition of enjoying the Emperor's New Groove with the second gen.
I feel like I've heard rumors that there's like the Yzma coaster, you know, is like a thing in Villain's Land.
Like pull the lever cronk.
Like, how can they not? How can they not? This is your chance, Disney. Don't blow it.
I know.
You're doing it. You're on the precipice.
We're right there. I mean, and that was the thing, like with like the conversion of Splash Mountain to Tiana's Bayou Adventure, which is also a great version of that ride, obviously, and it's very beautiful. But the obvious drop scenario,
yeah,
felt so primed.
I know.
For
pull the lever clunk.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and then that's where you drop at the exact same moment, and it would be like, oh, joyous.
But they can still do it now. They can build it. It's purpose built.
It's not too late.
There's just not that many Disney movies that have roller coasters in them. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And now you're building a Villain's Land, and there is a canonical villain with a roller coaster. Disney, do not mess it up. Are you looking it up? No.
Okay. No. You have one shot, one opportunity.
Yeah. To not miss.
To seize everything you ever wanted.
Something. Yeah.
One of these days,
one shot, one opportunity.
One of these days, I'm going to learn all the words to it. It's like an ambition. It is not. There's not even that much standing between me and doing it.
I know. You could probably knock it out this afternoon if you really wanted to.
Just go sit down and be like, Addison, I have important work to do in my office. You know, like,
I'll be rapping for the rest of the night.
If you need me, I'll be rapping.
I'll be rapping.
And then she'd be like, presents for me, and I'd be like,
no.
I see where this was confusing and unexpected for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, Daddy, how much rapping are you gonna do? How much rapping have you been doing? And you're like, more than you know.
More than you know.
More than you know. I rap more than you know.
Anyway, transition?
Transition!
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by BetterHelp. Quick real talk, you guys. Jay and I are big advocates for mental health support. We both see counselors ourselves and try to create an open dialogue about the experience. At SCB, we even have a no questions asked policy for our staff to take therapy appointments at any time. And recently, BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. And I get it. I remember the first time I ever spoke publicly about going to a session. It felt like the ultimate act of vulnerability. I choked up. I had tears in my eyes. I was afraid of what the world might think. But if there's one thing I found about speaking with members of this community, it's that a nudge can and does help in their lives. And I firmly believe that for every person who can take the first step opens the door for others in their lives to do the same. And with BetterHelp, all you have to do is take a quick survey about your needs and they'll match with a therapist that fits your goals. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. When I first tried to explain what I do for a living to my father-in-law, I'm pretty sure he didn't think it was a real job. But you know what's overrated? Real jobs. Sorry, Mark, if you're listening. But if you're tired of passive-aggressive emails from Steve down in accounting, it might be time to take that daydream life of yours and turn it into a reality with Shopify. And for me, the daydream part was no problem. If anything, I had too many. Jay and I had this carport in the house that we shared when we were starting SCB that was just full of experiments? But it was executing an idea that felt like the tricky part. And by executing, I mean, how do people buy my, let's call them, inventions? But Shopify had the solution. It's easy to set up, even easier to close a sale. Shopify does all of the heavy lifting, so once you've convinced the person that they need a chandelier made of bottle caps, you don't lose them due to a complicated checkout procedure. I also love that Shopify can store information so that repeat customers can complete their purchase with ease. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business. So go make it one, even if it doesn't seem like a real job. Start your free trial at shopify.com/poppop. Again, you can start your free trial at shopify.com/poppop.
Okay, Jay, I see that you have written here in the notes a conversation topic that I feel like is going to be fun. You have achievement answers the question, what have I accomplished? Fulfillment answers, how have I lived?
Indeed. Indeed. Well, because I was reading a Substack the other day.
Look at you go.
I know. Yeah.
Wow. You
know.
Did your IQ go up by like 3 points just by like logging on?
Does it have to, is Substack, does Substack have to be smart?
I don't know.
It's just like blogs, isn't it?
I mean, it feels like it feels okay. How do I say this? How do I say this? Like, there's, I feel biased because we make long form content, and I feel like on the whole, long form content feels like a harder sell than short form content.
Okay.
But I'm very proud that when we make long form content, that people have enough trust in us to tune in.
To tune into it.
To,
yeah.
To say 17 minutes, not too long to answer this question.
Right.
You know, like for Super Carlin Brothers, and obviously for everything else we do, it's like an hour plus. But
yeah.
So
thanks for listening to this show.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Half hour in. Why was I saying this?
Substack.
Substack feels like the kind of thing where it's like you have to like you have to be like invested. It's the way I used to feel about Reddit as well, where like if you were going on Reddit, like it almost feels like there is a bias to Reddit inherently, which is the people who respond to questions on Reddit are also Reddit users.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there is like a standard that Reddit frequenters have like established for what it means. And like, so sometimes I actually really love like r/no stupid questions because it's like a rare opportunity to ask a question without being met with like, did you do any research first instead of like coming here?
Right.
You know, because I feel like a lot of times there's a couple like Reddit, I feel like very frequently also has like those people who are like, people already asked this question. It's like,
oh, I know, like on forums.
Yes, exactly.
They'd be like, people already ask us, why don't you check the pinned post? And I'm like, I don't know, there's like 20 of them, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's like maybe the way that I phrased it was a little bit differently from the way that they phrased it.
Yeah.
Who's to say?
Maybe instead of saying someone already asked it, you could have just like answered it again.
Type the answer. Exactly. Right. Yes. Yeah. It's like, this feels like too harmful. Anyway, so that being said, Substack, I feel like is it to me, this is pure perception. It like steps into like a like academia level of like social media.
Oh, academia level of social media. Okay.
That would be like my interpretation of it.
Okay. Maybe yeah. I should get a Substack, you know.
Maybe you should because you're an academic.
Because I'm so academic.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know things.
I know. You know it.
Right. But so you were reading a Substack the other day about the difference between accomplishment and fulfillment.
I suppose so. It's from Enjoy Alyssa, in case anyone wants to go. Read the whole thing.
Enjoy Alyssa. Yeah.
That's the name. Substack.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
So how do you relate to this?
Well, it made me think of you immediately, which is why I put it in the pop.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, because I feel like I've been harping on the idea of fulfillment for like 6 straight years.
I feel like you have been harping on the idea of fulfillment. And like a couple of weeks ago, I feel like we were having a conversation where you were trying to answer the question of fulfillment based on your achievements. And I was like, oh my gosh. This is exactly what we were talking about, but it is like parsed out in such a nice, clean way.
Okay.
Where it is that like they are completely different things that are not related.
So your fulfillment doesn't come from your accomplishments.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
Okay.
Achievement answers the question, what have I accomplished? You know, like I graduated from college and I own my own business and, you know, I whatever. Have this many employees and own this car.
Okay.
You know.
Sure. So like on some level, this is me just being devil's advocate here. This is not like a position I hold, but like, would you say that accomplishment's primary function is like the ways in which you've avoided boredom?
Boy, that's like, it feels like a whole separate topic, but let's see. Is accomplishment the ways in which you've avoided boredom. No, not necessarily.
No. Okay. No. Okay. Well, it's like accomplishment. I think accomplishments in general are kind of like, in many ways, and I guess it depends on the accomplishment for you. Like, other people may benefit from it.
Right.
Which is certainly the case. But like, I remember when I was running my marathon, I thought a lot about how this was like the single most selfish act I could possibly be involved with. And it's not like a legitimate feeling towards the idea of marathon running, which is otherwise just a healthy and interesting ambition and a lofty goal to pursue.
Right.
So like, this is not me coming after marathons or anything like that. But when you think about the fact that it is a massive exertion of energy and calorie usage in the name of simply finishing.
Right.
You know, it's like there isn't the accomplishment is doing it.
Right.
And maybe there's a lot to be said for the fact, not even maybe, I would say it's true, that running a marathon at all teaches you a level of commitment to a challenging task that you can then apply elsewhere. So it's like, even if you want to, like, you almost have to isolate the simple act of running the marathon as being like selfish.
Right.
You know, because doing it for you.
The way you're phrasing it is making me think of the podcast Freakonomics.
Okay.
Where it feels like, yeah, you're right. There's not an episode about this that I'm aware of. Maybe there is. Maybe there should be. That the act of holding an event for a marathon, like the like caloric economy of that is like such waste, right? Like, because if you're holding a race, you are inviting, you know, 10,000 runners to come expend 26 miles worth of calories for the sake of expending them.
Sure.
Which is just like, we just spent a ton of calories on something that absolutely did not need to be done.
Yes. You know,
like, as far as...
So that's exactly what I mean. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, think about how it's... Marathons could really only, like, properly exist as like a pastime in environments where there's a surplus of calories available to be consumed. Because if you were like a, you know, a hunter gatherer or whatever, if you just like woke up and went running for personal enjoyment, then it's like, by the time the hunt goes around, it's like, why are you tired?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, why did you get up and run 5 miles before we're going to get up and chase down a deer for 20 miles?
Right. That was ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You're so much worse for the hunt.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Are you as prepared as you need to be? So then that would be almost the example. So like, in terms of that kind of achievement and basically even as part of the devil's advocate, maybe I'll just place the little bar here, which is that by going and pursuing things that you love, you probably have a zest for life that you can carry into other facets. So that would be like the grit you learn from running a marathon. It's sort of like, okay, I can do hard things.
Right.
If I keep going, I will make it.
Right.
You know, in a lot of ways that can be very useful when you're facing long-term objectives that take a lot more commitment, because that is what running a marathon is. It's, you know, 6 months of training culminated in one of the hardest physical endeavors you can do.
Right.
But so is it a cure for boredom? Because like, I guess you could make the argument that if everyone just went and like simply lived, it's like, it could be kind of boring. It could be kind of like uninteresting, but these things that we seek out aside from like our industries or careers or families, it's like they are pastimes. They are a way to pass the time.
I mean, yes. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not even firmly behind the point that I'm attempting to make, but I think I at least understand the gist of what I'm attempting to say.
I mean, you could have achievements at work, you know, that aren't anything to do with curing boredom.
That's true.
You know, like if you got a promotion, that's like a good achievement.
That is an achievement. You know? Yes. Yes. And theoretically, anything that you're doing for work is contributing to the greater society in some capacity.
Yeah.
You know, at bare minimum through taxes.
Right. I think it's not necessarily whether or not, I think it's not whether achievements are a cure for boredom, is that achievements are not a cure for fulfillment.
Okay. So like you will not feel fulfilled by running 10 marathons.
Right.
By not you, like not by having run them, like they can only, what would that mean then? So like running the marathon can only fill your tank with pride or whatever for such a period of time before it's just another accomplishment that you've done.
I think so. It's like you can, because there's always like the next thing after that achievement, right?
It's like the hedonic.
You ran 10 marathons, but you could run 15, or you could get another promotion, or you could, you know, make partner, or you could start your own business, or you could, you know, whatever the next thing might be.
Right.
You know, you could buy a house, a bigger house. You could start renting a side property, whatever it is.
Sure.
Like you could have these things. And it's like, those are all great accomplishments or good achievements to, you know, put on your resume, but it's not necessarily going to make you as a person feel fulfilled, because you're right, maybe it's like the hedonic treadmill. Whereas it's like, maybe running a marathon, for example, might not be like offer you fulfillment. However, I would bet like the act of like, if you're training for the marathon though, with like a group of friends or whatever, you know, and you meet them every week for 5 weeks and you become great friends and you do stuff outside of training or whatever, then like that is probably going to offer you like the real kind of fulfillment that's going to make you like happy in the long term rather than having just finished the race.
Okay. Yeah, I can see what you mean.
It's like more about the experiences you're having with other people than the actual like, you know, like list on your resume.
I can understand that. Like, cause I think that there is something to be said for like I've talked about this a lot, but like content creating in general can be like an unusual career in terms of the way in which you feel fulfilled. Like, you know, if you are like, even back, like when I would sell like aquariums to people, like in a retail environment, there was always this, like, there was a fulfillment that came from speaking with people, speaking with families, like working with them to help them better understand like the marine life ecosystem and just getting to like share my own enthusiasm and knowledge with others. And I think that like a lot of what we do now is the same thing. We're sharing our enthusiasm and knowledge about the, you know, fandoms that we cover with other people.
Right.
But you don't get to experience it with them. You don't get to like see the way in which they are impacted by the content. But then on the flip side, when we go on tour and you do get to see that firsthand, then it's like, well, this is quite fulfilling.
Right.
You know, you're like, okay, I get to see the way in which what we do actually does have an impact out there in the world.
Right.
So like the thing I used to always say is like, you know, it's hard to feel like I'm making the world a better place one Harry Potter theory at a time or whatever. But then you see that there is something that you can give to people that is, it's not the Harry Potter content.
Right. It's not the Harry Potter of it all.
It's the company.
Right.
It's the safe space. It's the consistency, the reliability, you know, like, you know, the humor, the uplifting, you know, like messaging, like that we try to bring into everything that we do. You know, it's like, those things shine when you can see the people.
Right.
And so like, you know, we've been talking a little bit about lately about like utopias and stuff like that, or like the like Ready Player One,
right,
version of the future. And it's like, the Ready Player One could be so interesting because like you could almost take anything from the physical world and make it seem rather utilitarian. So like in Ready Player One, the books, for example, they like live in like the stacks, which is like a bunch of like shipping containers like stacked on top of each other.
Right.
And I don't know if that's how like every city is in that world or anything, but it is where the main character Wade lives. So it's like, you know, you live in this like thing, he sleeps in a washing machine or whatever, but then he goes and he gets to like live his life in the Oasis.
Right.
You know, and there are other people in the Oasis, but I don't know like if anything is ever a substitute for just like in-person communication.
Yeah, that's a good example, honestly, because like, yeah, the whole like the way Ready Player One is positioned is that, you know, there's the big battle for the grand Easter egg at the end.
Right.
And Wade's been wanting to win the contest since it was announced, even when everyone else said, no, it's not real or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's remained passionate to it. Like, to him, the ultimate achievement will be finding the Easter egg and winning the contest. And it also ends up becoming a matter of like the future of the world because, you know, the bad guys are after it too, or sure, whatever.
Yeah. Right.
But spoilers, whatever. Like once he does finally get it and he has successfully like hit this massive achievement, it turns out that that's not even what he cares about. Like that's when he like takes the headset off and like actually goes on a, you know, a walk with the, who's the Artemis.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
Like just in like, real life through the gardens. And it's just like, yeah, like you did achieve beating the game, but what was truly fulfilling was all the friends you made along the way and the time you're spending with her in real life, not in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, like the real journey was the friends you made along the way.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like the classic,
yeah, some of that, yeah,
you know, cliche phrase or whatever, but there is, it's almost like that is, there's so much more truth in that than I think we think, you know, because that is like, Okay. So here's a question. Is achievement a tool inside of fulfillment's toolbox? So like the idea here would almost be like your marathon example, where it's like if you train for like what I did, like I trained for the marathon with like two of my best friends.
Right.
And so what that meant was that like we had like a standing reason to go and like spend anywhere between an hour and 3 hours together every Sunday, depending on how long our long run was.
Right.
You know, so it was like a standing reason to go and do that. And so then what you ended up doing is you're getting like good quality time together. You're talking for that entire stretch.
Right.
You know, it's not so much about running the 12 miles you did that day. It's more about just the in-person
right
antics and the jokes and, you know, that one bicyclist guy who came whipping past us and said we had zero etiquette for taking up the entire, you know,
Running three abreast.
We were running three abreast and we weren't supposed to be.
Wow. Yeah.
And so he said zero etiquette. So then Mike on his like marathon bib, you're allowed to like customize it. His like little message at the bottom said zero etiquette. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Anyway, so the zero etiquette was like the fulfillment we achieved along the way.
Yeah. Ha, okay.
And I use the word achieved.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And then I was just looking back. I was trying to read through, skim through said Substack.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure, I was getting the messaging right here if I'm going to sit here and talk about it.
Look at you being
like,
so intellectual.
It's called, yeah, I know. The headline of it is Stop Optimizing Your Life.
Okay, yeah, I like
is
that.
Like,
yeah.
And the point being that like, you know, oh, you can keep thinking there's like one more thing that'll make my life a little bit better and keep chasing that thing over and over and over. But like the pursuit of chasing those things is like getting them over and over and over is not going to, because you're just going to keep trying to optimize again.
Right.
Instead of like living in the present and enjoying what you've like already got. So I don't know. Maybe like also like a count your blessings sort of thing.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean with that one too. Like I think that is like the, again, going back to the renovation, it's like I've now touched almost every corner of my property. I think I've said that several times and I continue to do 10 more things and it's like, wow, there was still more left to do, I guess.
Right.
But that is like one of those where it's almost like, you know, when we first moved in, we noticed how drafty it was because like the windows or whatever. And it
yeah.
was just sort of like, oh my gosh, this house desperately needs state-of-the-art windows. We're just losing electricity through them.
Right.
You know, like a windy day, if you were sitting on the couch, it was like you could just, your
you
hair
just feel
would
the
like
wind.
Jostle in the breeze or whatever. But it was like, you don't do windows before you do kitchen, you know? So it's like, well, you gotta do kitchen first. And then it was sort of like, all right, well, now that we got like the kitchen taken care of, then we gotta do like a bathroom.
Right.
And it's like, you know, we got the bathroom taken care of. And then it's like, all right, you know, like you start to like peel back the layers. And what you ultimately find is per your own individual requirements, I suppose, when I finally reached Windows and it was like, okay, I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, like now Windows need to happen.
It's time for Windows.
It's like, you know, I can't go and do a new walk path in my front yard, you know, like this like meandering like sidewalk that I've got
right.
until I've got new windows, because those will help improve the quality of life of the home. And the other one is just purely like an aesthetic thing for like outside.
Right.
You know, so it's like, yeah, you kind of have to, but you're right. Like, I mean, there is always the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And you just kind of press forward all the time and always. And the pursuit of the next thing, I guess, is maybe where I would ask the question, is achievement a cure for boredom again? Because it's almost like, why is it so hard to just sit back and count your blessings?
Because you think achievement will make you feel fulfilled.
Like me personally or like the royal you?
Both.
But okay. So like, what does this look like for you? Like, do you feel like you can get to like the end of the what's next question and then just sort of like exist?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I have like projects that I want to do around my house and stuff.
Right.
And like, you know, different, you know, races I want to run and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't feel like those are the things that will make my life having been worth lived.
Right. Yes. And that's where like, I tend to think that like one of the greatest things that I can do in my life is raise Addison and like right. do it well.
Yeah.
And it's not just for her sake. It's almost like if she is like an arrow that I can shoot into the future, who can be like a force for good in the world, then to me, that is like, it's an achievement that I'm seeking, but the quest, I put a lot of pressure on, if that makes sense. So like, I don't want to like mess up. So like a lot of times, like even when I'm having a good time or like something is fun, like sometimes it will like force me to question like, are we putting too much emphasis on fun and not an emphasis on like growth or learning or any of the other important things? But then it's like, having fun is so vital, especially in childhood.
Right.
And then even just like learning what types of things would be fun for you when you get older. It's like, it's all part of like the recipe for giving her a scenario in the future where she can feel fulfilled and
right.
seek achievement and stuff like that. So it's an odd one because I think that at some point in time, the fulfillment in my life, like the greatest fulfillment, might be watching her take flight of her own accord.
Oh, I agree.
And
yeah,
but like, that is an achievement that I do think will fulfill, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I would agree. Those seem like those align in a more natural way.
Right. Much that's more like, than a new walkway does.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so that's the thing that's interesting for me is that it's like, I think the things that I do that are chasing fulfillment, I personally think I put like a lot of pressure on myself to do a good job at, because I don't want to throw that future fulfillment like in the garbage, but you don't get to like seize the comfort of the fulfillment until the project is complete. Is the concern. The worry.
Okay.
Like, what would be like almost that, like, you know, I'll work hard. It's almost like, it's like training for the marathon, you know, it's like everything you do, it's like discipline and it's like responsibility and it's like mindfulness and it's trying to balance like, you know, structure with fun and, you know, like good guiding principles and morals and ethics and all the things that are, you're trying to, you know, deliver to your children to help right. them be good people. You know, and not just good people, but like people who can be happy.
Right.
You know, and like that can be like an oddly complex thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I feel like we've become very aware of like helicopter parents from like our own generation and like, you know, or like a kid who's given too many like toys, like the dangers of being spoiled just as much as the dangers of being neglected. Like, you know, they're obviously completely different ends of spectrums, obviously, but like, where's the middle ground? You know, how do you find it?
Right.
And the pursuit of all those things like weighs on me awful heavy. So that's like the, I'm fulfilled by raising Addison, but I'm terrified all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have to be, not maybe being terrified.
And terrified's a strong word choice here because it's not like I'm like trembling all the time.
Right.
You know, like I brought her to Chuck E. Cheese today. Like, oh my gosh, did I mess her up?
Oh no,
you know,
I wouldn't worry like, about that.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. So it's like, I think when I think about it, like zoomed out from, you know, 1,000 feet away, that can be like how I feel about it. When I'm living in the moment though, I can live and do it and like, be a part of it. But yeah, I don't know. So it's interesting. It's hard to know, like, where do you find the most fulfillment in your life?
Oh, I mean, definitely probably like raising my kids as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like what we do here too, like at work. Like, I find that to be a pretty fulfilling job in terms of like getting to, like, you know, we get to express ourselves a lot and we get the chance to be creative a lot.
Right.
You know, so that's really good. And then, you know, just my overall marriage with Beth, you know, also very fulfilling.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those things.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So like throughout the course of life though, like where do you find the balance between achievement and fulfillment? Like what are you doing, or like why?
I don't think like there's no reason to like have goals or like try and achieve things or anything. Like,
say that one more time.
I'm not saying like don't have goals you're trying to achieve.
Oh, sure.
Or anything
sure.
like that. Yeah. I think if it's just like, if it's a kind of more, I think what the article is arguing is that like if you're hoping that the next like big purchase or next big promotion or next home improvement or just what, you know, fill in the blank thing sure. is going to be the thing that brings you like a complete sense of like fulfillment, like I don't think it will, because there will always be another thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean those things aren't worth doing.
Right.
You know, it doesn't, but it's not going to be the thing that makes your life like having been worth lived.
Okay. So this is sort of like an interesting response to what you've just said there, because like throughout my life, or I think even like very early on in Super Carlin Brothers, like, you know, whether you're talking like politics or like, you know, whatever, like how the world operates, I would have said that I just sort of thought like in general, like capitalism works, I guess, like, you know, mm-hmm. like I think would have like been my take, like, even like saying that now, I'm like, wow, don't say that too loud. But it's not necessarily that, like, what typically what I've thought about like financial ecosystems is that they're all going to have their pluses and minuses. And so it's like, you know, you could take our current capitalistic society and swap it out for something tomorrow, and we will find the shortcomings of it. They will exist. There is right. no such, like, there probably is no such thing as a perfect economic model.
Right.
And I think I used to always be like confused when people would like blame capitalism for this, that, and the other. But I actually think that maybe this is like my more matured understanding of it, is not necessarily like thinking of capitalism as like a financial ecosystem or model for how you can like operate an economy, but it's more things like this. It's more like, you know, like we like doing like the Spartan races, but like the Spartan races would try to sell you not just the idea of like buying your race number or whatever, but the idea, the belief that in doing this race, you will feel fulfilled. So like, I think in a lot of cases, achievement is sold as the opportunity to discover fulfillment.
Exactly.
And that to me is... that to me is like the ultimate shortcoming, is that probably what would solve a lot of like depression and anxiety in the world is a greater relationship with the activities and the way that you administer your energy in terms of converting it into fulfillment rather than achievement.
Right. And it's like, I mean, if you do Spartan races for a hobby, chances are you're not just doing that completely solo. You probably go to a gym. You probably do the races with your friends. You probably travel around the country with those friends. And those, and it's like the races are great. And it's probably like, it's great that that's the thing that brings you together. And it's awesome to have all the medals. But I assure you, it's more the friends you made along the way.
Right.
You know,
like, you're more likely to source enjoyment after the fact when you're texting in your group chat being like, oh my gosh, remember when Billy fell over on the sandbag carry? Like, haha,
right.
Good one, Billy.
Right.
Or whatever. Then sitting in your office by yourself, holding the medal and just like sitting and looking at it in your office chair being like, wow, I've done it.
Exactly.
You know, like I have this medal that proves that I could do a super distance Spartan race.
Right.
Which, to be absolutely clear, like I like Spartan racing.
Oh, I know. Like, I mean, we're looking at one doing later this year.
I know. Yeah. So this is, but as ever, it's like, you know, if we're using something as an example, it's not necessarily the critique of the example. It's mostly just a working example to
right.
explain the point.
Right. Right. Well, anyway, I feel like that was a fun discussion.
I love it.
To
love
be
it.
Had.
Yeah, yeah. There yeah. we go. All right. Well done. Well done. Transition?
Transition. All right, Ben, I have a strong opinion for you about a very weak thing.
Please tell me.
It's a truly weak thing, Ben. It is creamer for your coffee. Oh,
yeah. I think I know exactly where you're going creamer with this coffee. One.
Yeah. Okay, here's my strong opinion.
All right.
Look, there are two, for all intents and purposes, there are two mega brands for coffee creamer.
Yep.
All right? You have International Delight.
Right.
Right? And then you have Coffee Mate.
Yes.
Let me tell you something, Ben. One of those is an absolute delight, and one of those is Coffee Mate. Coffee Mate coffee creamer has got to be the most undrinkable chemical spill of a product that exists on the market.
It really, like, I don't know how to describe it, but when you consume it, you're like, carcinogens.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's like... Yes, it is like, it feels like you're, it's just like a, it's like a little plastic cup of chemicals you can put in your coffee.
Yeah.
That tastes like awful and smells like sick. Like, I don't know how they're one of the two big brands. How this, like you have Coke and Pepsi, right? And people will argue about Coke and Pepsi, and I will too. I will tell you that Coke is a vastly superior product, but I will also concede that Pepsi's still pretty good, okay?
Sure.
All right? Like, and I wish this was the case. I wish it could be like, I obviously choose International Delight, but like, if you have Coffee Mate, yeah, I'll have it. But it's like, if I go downstairs to the hotel lobby and I fill my coffee cup and I look to the side and they don't have International Delight. They instead are a Coffee Mate hotel.
Yeah.
And it's like, guess I'm just having black coffee today.
Black coffee?
Yes, it is. Like, yeah. I like, because it's the, like, for a long time, I would have been one of those people who's like, I wanted to be the kind of person who was like, black coffee, that's the way it's supposed to be drunk, you know?
Yeah.
Black.
Like the natural. Most, the most natural version,
you know?
Of it. Yeah.
And now I'm much more of the opinion is like, you know what? You know how you should drink your coffee? How you enjoy it.
How you enjoy it.
How you enjoy it. And if you want, if that's with, you know, one scoop of creamer or two or sugar or whatever you want to put in it, good for you. You do that. But I tell you what's not making it better, no matter what, and that's Coffee Mate creamer. It's so bad.
So it's like no judgment. No judgment. Like you consume what you need to consume. That's totally fine. Like we have no issues. That it's literally on the back of our bag, that of our own brand of coffee is sort of like the best way to enjoy coffee is however the heck you like to enjoy coffee.
Right.
That's the end of that. However, if you're enjoying your coffee with Coffee Mate creamer, then like why hurt yourself?
Then like why hurt yourself? Also, you're actively making our coffee worse. Okay. Like I don't know what you're doing. Why would you do that? Why would you make your drink worse?
Here's the thing, though, is that of the people listening, because there are like two major brands
yeah.
shy of like going into like the, you know, the like oat milk or whatever, like the alternatives.
Yeah.
We're certainly like, there are certainly some people who are being like, oh no.
Oh no. No. They're like, wait. I thought it was like Coke and Pepsi, where it's like, you know, one. Like they're both, you know, viable. I've just been getting Coffee Mate. Now sure. They're like, wait a second. You're telling me International Delight is like vastly superior? And I just thought they were sort of the same. I thought all French vanilla was made the same.
Right.
It's not. It's not even close. Like, what do you like? Wake up and smell the actual good tasting coffee creamer, people. You're welcome. And this is not a sponsor. I promise you. And because look, if it was the, because here's what I will actually do if I'm downstairs getting my coffee.
Okay.
Right? If I'm at a hotel, if they had International Delight, French Vanilla, Coffee Mate, French Vanilla, half and half, I would just get the half and half usually.
Okay.
That would be my go-to, right? But otherwise, I would go for the International Delight. And if they didn't have either of those, I would drink it black. I would go nothing.
Nothing.
I would go nothing.
Nothing is better than Coffee Mate.
Yeah.
No, wait.
Yes. The way you said that was wrong.
It feels like the title of the episode, Nothing is Better Than Coffee Mate.
Zero is greater than Coffee Mate. No,
having nothing at all is better than having Coffee Mate.
You know but I mean, am I wrong here?
No, you're not wrong.
Okay.
I agree with you completely. I am also not a fan of Coffee Mate creamer. And I think that this is like one of those things that for like a long time, I knew it was like an opinion that you had held. And I think it was just sort of like, because we're together so dang always, mm-hmm. it like was very infrequent that I was encountering Coffee Mate. And then recently I have had it and it was sort of like, ugh.
You're like, wait a minute. Ugh,
now what
something.
Now?
Something. I used to convince myself, sometimes I'll get down there and I'll be like, maybe if I put the lid on and I can like block the smell.
Right.
If I can block the smell, which you'd think would be vanilla, but it's not. It's chemicals.
It's chemicals.
Then maybe that'll work. It doesn't. I think they've upped it. I think they've upped the chemicals.
They've added chemicals.
They've added chemicals. Right. It says French vanilla. What it means is French chemicals, but probably not even from real France. I'm sorry. That's throwing France under the bus. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't mean to do that.
Let me back up and try again.
It says French vanilla. What it means is chemicals. Just whatever that means to you, that's what's going in, and right. That's what it's going to taste like.
They scrape a little of the surface of Jupiter off, and just, you know, that way we can throw Jupiter under the bus.
Yeah, what's nobody, Jupiter going to do?
Nobody lives there.
No one lives there, right? Man, ugh.
Should have thought twice, Jupiter.
Should have thought twice. You know what's worse than regular Coffee Mate creamer?
What?
Powdered Coffee Mate creamer.
You are absolutely correct.
Why? There. Why does this exist?
It's so bad. It is such a. It's like substitute, or I'm trying to think of like. I mean, it is considered a substitute for like, you know, creamer,
yeah,
or whatever. But it's like who in the world was thinking like it's okay to call these things the same product,
right?
You know,
it's not.
Like, and I remember in my marketing classes that like the FDA like actively regulates the difference between like ketchup, tomato sauce, and tomato paste,
mm-hmm.
strictly based on viscosity.
Sure.
Like they are like the same ingredients across all three, and they, but like, you know, one is runny, one is kind of like in between, and one is kind of thick,
right?
You know, and it's sort of like that is, you know, the viscosity.
That's the difference,
right? It's like we have to call it tomato paste because it's too thick to be called ketchup. And it's like, you mean to tell me that it is acceptable to call this creamer,
right?
It's like it's not even close to what is otherwise the bad product that it's imitating.
I know it's not. And then not only that, you need like half the carton before it has turned the coffee a shade of anything other than black anyway.
True.
Tell you what. Like if you're sitting here like, man, Jay's a coffee snob. Like I'm not. Okay. What I love is just having coffee. Like when I'm on a road trip, every time we stop at a gas station, which is usually just whichever one's available.
Yeah.
I'll just get it.
I'll just get it.
I love gas station coffee. Okay. So, you know, and it's fine. I will drink it. I like coffee. I don't like coffee with Coffee Mate creamer.
Nice.
There you go. Wow. I said my piece. Get out of here. I hope this makes it up. There. If you're an international delight, listen up. We'll accept your sponsorship.
Let's talk.
Or you know what? Really any other coffee creamer. If you're like an up and coming coffee creamer startup, you know, hit us up. We'd love to talk to you.
Oh my gosh.
As long as it doesn't smell like chemicals.
Yeah, we don't do that.
We don't do that here.
Right. The only backlash I could see us getting for this is people being like, guys, the chemical breakdown in both of them is about the same.
Well, then look, even if that's the case, one of them tastes great and one of them does not. Okay. I understand that people are going to be like, guys, international delight has chemicals in it too. Like, I get it. All right. I know it's like creamer you can leave out forever and it's probably still okay to drink. They put the little packets out in unrefrigerated things and that's also its own weirdness. Okay. I get it. But at least it still tastes good.
There you go. Yeah. Well, at least you got to say your piece.
It's been said.
Which is that nothing is better than Coffee Mate.
Pop, pop.
And with that, we will close out today's episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. As always, if you'd like to send any feedback for the show, especially about your creamer preferences, you can do so at popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like some like ad-free listening, some bonus content each week, you can check it all out at patreon.com/popcornculture. Great way to support the show. Otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.